Hi, I'm Vancouver Sun City columnist Dan Fumano, and I'm here with my colleague Darm Makwana.
Hi, Dan. How's it going?
Hey, good, thanks. How are you, Darm? Thanks for joining us.
Very good. Thanks for allowing me into the room. So we're going to flip the script this week. Dan, you have written two pieces, one on a housing forum hosted by the Sauder School of Business.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we are recording this, our web desk is perhaps about to publish your feature on density.
Any minute now.
So it's pretty exciting. And I thought today would be a great day to interview you, to talk about what you saw out in the field and sort of what you've learned in your interviews for this feature. So let's start off with the Sauder School of Business housing panel discussion.
Yep.
There were nine people at the Fairmont Pacific Rim. Obviously a great choice to talk about housing affordability.
Yeah, a couple of people commented on that before the event got going, that it was perhaps it was an interesting venue to be talking about homelessness, affordable housing, non-market housing, stuff like that. It was a pretty bougie event. It was nice. I mean, my understanding is that they actually Sauder hosts this event every year, or a similar event, a housing forum where they talk to it's largely an industry crowd, right? A real estate industry crowd. This year, what's different, I guess, is there's a municipal election, so they thought it would be a good opportunity to invite, instead of industry figures on stage, to have candidates.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was, you know, people are eating artisanal cheeses and drinking wine.
They were.
While they were waiting.
I had some salami. It was delicious.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, the stage was pretty crowded because this crazy election this year, there are so many candidates, so many different parties in the running. And so they had a bunch of different mayoral candidates as well as some council candidates.
Yeah, nine total.
Nine.
And then notable missing mayoral candidates were Wei Young.
Yeah,
and Wei Fred Harding.
Nope.
I think Wei Young was doing something for specific to her party as opposed to participating in another panel session or anything like that.
Yeah,
and I'm not sure what Fred,
was
up to.
Fred, I don't know. Maybe the invitations for this thing were sent out earlier before Fred had announced his campaign, because he was a relatively new entrant into the race.
Yep.
So I'm not sure. Maybe they had already organized it.
Yeah, for sure. So nine people, you know, five mayoral candidates, four council candidates. What were your impressions on the format?
Well, it's challenging to hear substantive kind of amounts of info from that many people without having the event go on and on and on and on. It was interesting to hear these people talk. You know, from my perspective, it maybe would have been even more interesting and kind of more compelling if they had a chance to sort of respond to each other and debate. But to be fair, that's not what this event was billed as, or sort of the way it was set up. It was billed as a candidates panel, a forum on housing. So a chance for each of them to sort of give their opinions on things and describe their platform and their policies. So instead of them replying to each other, basically they were a pair of moderators. It was Nadia Stewart from Global News and Ian Bushfield from the Civic Affairs podcast, The Canby Report. And they asked kind of a series of questions, and they would ask one question and then have each of the nine candidates answer the same question. So it was interesting, but yeah, I mean, it would have been neat to see a debate, see them get off script a little bit and have to respond to each other, think on their feet. Because of the format, it kind of allowed them to stick to certain talking points that we've largely heard from these people before.
Did you think there was a lot of overlap between the candidates?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, on certain things there was. And I mean, one thing that was kind of interesting was when the moderators did a sort of a lightning round, they called it, where they asked just yes or no questions and they tried to corner the candidates into giving a yes or no answer. A lot of them wanted to give, you know, 20 or 30 or 40 word answers to provide caveats and context, which is understandable. But the moderators did their best to try to peg them into one word answers. I thought the moderators did a good job with the difficult task of having that many candidates. But the lightning round provided an interesting chance for some actual from differentiation. Like one of the questions they posed was, would you support increasing the empty homes tax, right? Of course, recently Vancouver became the first municipality in Canada to implement an empty homes tax, or a tax on underutilized homes or second homes. And all seven of the candidates said yes or indicated some kind of support for increasing it. Some of them suggested tripling it or tripling it in certain kinds of properties. But seven of them had suggested increasing it in some way. And only two opposed increasing it. One was the NPA's Ken Sim, who said it's not effective. And the other was Hector Bremner, who just kind of said, not right now. He doesn't think it's a good policy to pursue increasing it at this time.
Someone's got to stand up for homeowners, don't you think?
Multiple homeowners? I guess
or just like detached family homeowners. It felt like in that forum, you know, everyone was talking about a way to reform housing so that there could be more ownership, right? But in my mind, sometimes I think, you know, there's probably a pool of existing homeowners who like things the way they are.
Yeah, right. But the empty homes tax would not apply to you unless you own more than one home.
I mean, sorry,
by its the way it's set up.
Absolutely, the tax for sure. But in general, I think it felt like there were very much people like the 7-4 revising that tax. Like we need to change housing in various different ways.
Yeah,
I felt someone needs to stand up for the status quo. I think right. And maybe the two on the right, Sim and Bremner, are more in line with that? What do you think?
Yeah, I think that seems fair. I mean, at the very beginning of the evening, the host, Tom Davidoff, who's a professor of economics from the Sauder School of Business, who we frequently talk to and he's frequently quoted in the media, Davidoff started off the event by posing a hypothetical situation to each of the nine candidates, which he described as a Kobayashi Maru.
Yeah.
Were you familiar with that reference?
I am a big Star Trek fan.
Are you? Okay.
Yeah, big time.
Can you explain for us quickly, please?
So I think it's sort of like a test, but it is a no-win solution. Anything you do will result in a bad outcome, perhaps.
Your
right?
Spaceship crashing.
Exactly.
In the Trek example.
The Enterprise is down. So So it's like you gotta figure out the best of a bad situation. How did Spock solve that one? Do you remember? Was he like, there is no test, or it was some sort of piece of like Vulcan logic where he's just like, no.
I don't know.
I'm not doing this. I'm walking out.
Yeah. Or no, wasn't it Kirk
who
just refused to accept the premise?
Oh, God.
Anyways.
Good thing we're not doing a Star Trek podcast. That'd be the
worst. Yeah. Although it might be popular, although I don't have the expertise. But if you got Eaglund in here, you can talk all day.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Okay, maybe next time. So for Davidoff's hypothetical situation he was describing, I mean, he went into a lot more detail, but basically it was a housing proposal coming before council. And where you would have a multiple-story, multifamily housing getting built, but the neighborhood is up in arms, really opposed to it. They want just houses.
Yeah.
And he kind of went through each of the candidates. And again, he went into a lot more detail. I think there were different aspects to this proposal. But I can't remember exactly who opposed it, but most of the candidates said they were certainly in favor of it. Bremner certainly was, Swanson, and all these different candidates were in favor of it. But Ken Sim was notably the one who said no, and I think his reason was something along the lines of, again, just reiterating that he wants Vancouver to have a comprehensive kind of community plan, and he wants neighborhoods to be able to kind of be the masters of their own destiny or the masters of their own density, if you will. So to your point about maybe if he's the standing up for the status quo, the sort of the homeowners, people like that, then I think that seems like a fair point. And again, you know, to be clear, Sim has said that he accepts that more density is inevitable. We do need to densify the city, but he wants to do it in a way where neighborhoods choose their own kind of way forward instead of having a top-down approach dictated to them.
The other distinction I thought really interesting was the distinction between insiders and people who are in and around that city council scene and then outsiders. Mm. So like Kennedy Stewart, he talked a lot about the housing situation in Vancouver from a federal perspective, whereas someone like Bremner, current councillor, was kind of like slicing and dicing policy and spitting out numbers, and others who are around council like Diego Cardona, Pete Fry, Shauna Sylvester to some degree were also well-versed on specific policies as opposed to like big picture type ideas that maybe Stewart and Sim presented, right? Because Sim's a bit on the outside too. Did you find that as well?
Yeah. I think that seems fair. I mean, Bremner is the only sitting councillor who's running for mayor this year. The others, I mean, the other ones you mentioned there, Kennedy Stewart, maybe he's providing a bigger picture look at it. That's where he's been. I mean, he's been in Ottawa for the last two terms, representing riding in Burnaby in the federal parliament. So maybe, you know, that's the perspective he's bringing to it. As I say, Bremner's the only one who's actually on council right now. And he's been there for less than a year, right? Because he got elected in last year's by-election. So he's a relative newcomer to council, but he's still got more council experience than any of the other eight people that were on stage that night. Of course, some other people like...
More than Swanson?
Well, sitting on council. I don't think Swanson... Sure. I was going to say, I mean, some of the people like Swanson or Pete Fry have followed council quite closely. Pete Fry was a candidate in the last election, and he certainly seems to follow civic affairs quite closely. And I think he's in council. You know, I see him sitting in there often, and he follows along quite closely. Sure. And then Swanson as well. I've seen her in there, you know, both as part of like guerrilla protests where they're taking over the council chambers, but then also to speak to different motions or sometimes just to observe. So she's certainly in council a lot, but she's never been on the other side of the chambers except for, you know, maybe that one time where housing activists swarmed council and took it over.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So with all that said, did you find it hard for council candidates to stand out? Did someone grab you and was like – or I'm sorry, not council candidates, mayoral candidates, right? Did you find it – did you find someone was like so vastly different from anyone else where it's like, whoa, like this guy is saying something or this lady is saying something that is different than the rest?
It's a fair question. I do think it was hard to stand out in that format, which again is not necessarily criticizing the format or the event itself. It was maybe a bit hard to stand out. And part of that is just, it's such a big field. I do think, and I thought pretty much everyone carried themselves quite well, I thought. And again, it's probably easier to come off well and come off well prepared if you're largely sticking to a script and not having to respond kind of on your feet to other candidates' barbs or challenges. So I thought everyone came off quite well. But I mean, Jean Swanson does kind of stand out as being different from the other candidates. She doesn't seem like – I mean, she's been around politics for a long time, for decades, and she's been involved in city politics. But I don't think she's ever been an actual politician. So she does seem different, right? She's kind of an activist. She comes at it from that side of things. And, you know, she does kind of stand out just because the way she speaks is different. And she really kind of sticks to her messages. And, you know, she's not afraid to say – like one of the questions she was asked, I think it may have been asked by Davidoff, where it was pretty kind of wonky, you know, economist,
yeah,
you know, like land economics and pretty kind of policy heavy stuff. She said, you know, that's kind of an esoteric question. And I don't really know. The thing I'm concerned about is the people who are sleeping on the street, and they are most profoundly affected by the housing crisis. And that she kind of sticks to her message. And, you know, a lot of her sort of platform points are fairly punchy and easy to digest, like things like a mansion tax or a rent freeze. They're sort of quick, easy to digest, even if, as some of her critics have pointed out, not all of those things are necessarily within the powers of City Hall. They're things that she's saying she would have to go and ask the province to get the authority to do some of these things. But apart from that, they do seem to be things that people can remember.
I also thought it was really impressive when she asked for an equal amount of time be spent on talking about Vancouver's homeless situation as community amenity contributions. And it's just like, you know what? Yeah, like, of course. Like, yeah. Why wouldn't we talk about that the same way or give it the same amount of time at least, right?
Yeah.
The other – I know we talked about it before we started recording, and we really didn't want to like pick winners and losers. But I do want to point out Diego Cardona.
Yeah.
I like – this was my first time really seeing him in an extended setting. And I left wanting to know more about him as a candidate, a person, sort of what he sees for the city.
Yeah.
Because the vision is a spectrum of people who are center left, right? Mm-hmm. Like I think he occupies a very particular part, perhaps closer to the lefter side of that. Lefter, if that's a word. What do you think of Diego? Like you covered him in the by-election, and then you're watching him again this time around.
Yeah. I mean, I think Diego is very impressive. He's very young. I think he was only 21 in last year's by-election, if I recall. So maybe he's 22 now, but I'm not sure exactly how old he is. But he's early 20s. But he, and he comes across very polished and well-prepared. He had a disappointing fifth-place finish in last year's by-election, if I recall. I think it was fifth. But, I mean, a lot of observers pointed out that by-elections are typically very hard on incumbent parties. Often it's a way that voters see a chance to sort of punish the incumbent party. And in this case, Vision has had a majority on council for 9 years going into that by-election. Hard to say how much of that is on him. And also, that by-election had a very small voter turnout of the overall electorate. It's a council by-election sort of a year before a general election. So hard to read too much into that. But, I mean, he was back there this week, and I don't even know how much of a chance he would have had to prepare. I don't know how much notice he had, because Ian Campbell, Vision's erstwhile mayoral candidate, was originally on the itinerary. He was originally going to be appearing. But then, of course, less than 48 hours before that event, Chief Campbell had withdrawn from the mayoral race. So with Campbell pulling out and not running in the race, I guess at some point Diego stepped in to represent Vision, and he came across really well. So it's impressive, especially considering that he was kind of a relatively last minute fill in. I thought he did well. He comes across well, and as I say, he's very young.
The other person I wanted to ask you about is Christine Boyle, another council candidate with One City. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. She's one of the two council candidates for One City. She also came across really well. Again, it was tough for people kind of to stand out more than any others, but I thought she came across as well as anyone. Mm-hmm. I don't know as much about Ms. Boyle. I believe she's a minister, United Church
minister. Yeah, that's right. That's right. She's a mom. She's a homeowner. Living in East Van. She definitely talked a lot about building community. She had a couple policy planks in terms of I don't want to say taxation, but like capturing revenue. There was a certain term.
Yeah, there's the land value capture that that One City has, it's a big key part of their platform. We won't get into the nuts and bolts of it right now, but it's a key part of One City's platform is this land value capture mechanism that they're wanting to promote. And a lot of the candidates spent a fair amount of time talking about their own personal stories, whether that was Kennedy Stewart coming from, growing up poor in Nova Scotia and then coming to Vancouver, or, Ken Sim describing his success as an entrepreneur and a businessman. Christine Boyle's story was largely one of, she's someone who grew up on the west side, now lives on the east side of Vancouver with her family. And the neighborhood where she grew up is kind of hollowed out and empty. I think she said she grew up in Carisdale or somewhere around there. And so these are kinds of stories that probably resonate with a lot of people. And a lot of people say, yeah, that sounds similar to my lived experience.
I don't know if it was intended or not by those who planned out this panel, but it felt like after Christine would give an answer, the seating plan was sort of like Christine and then Sean and Sylvester and then Ken Sim. So Christine would give an answer and then Sean would be like, oh, well, yes, I agree with Christine. And I was like, well, isn't that nice?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know. There's only going to be one mayor, but maybe all those people will be on council and they're going to just get along like gangbusters and agree and collaborate and work across party lines. Because that's as we've talked about here a bunch of times with a bunch of different guests, no matter what happens in this election, I think it's pretty hard to predict, but it seems quite possible that there's going to be an unprecedented kind of diversity of party affiliations on whoever makes up Vancouver's next council. So that's the question is, are they going to fight all the time across party lines, or are they actually going to be able to say, hey, even though you're a different party from me, I agree on that point. I think that's a great idea. Let's move that forward. That's the big question, I guess, looking ahead to next year, because it seems unlikely at this point that any one party is going to have a majority. I know some folks from the NPA think they really like their chances at getting a solid majority and they're running a big slate, but a lot of people, and if I was betting, I would think it seems like there's a decent chance no one party is going to have a majority. And I don't even know when the last time that happened. I mean, it's probably a while ago.
It definitely changes the idea of what it means to be mayor too, because you're no longer the figurehead of like a policy or a party and pushing ahead with a certain agenda, right? Now you need to build that agreement.
Yeah. I mean, you are it is still a sort of a – obviously it's a figurehead kind of role and it's an important role. You're still chairing those council meetings, but you're just one vote out of 11 on – you know, the mayor has the same number of votes as each of the other councilors.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to your – weekend feature, again, probably being published as we record the various challenges around density and urban planning that certain regions face. So I think you did Vancouver as one. You did the North Shore, sort of West Van, North Van.
Yeah.
North Van District
mm-hmm.
as one. And then south of the Fraser as the final one.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned a lot. I got to say, I was reading it and I was like, nice, Dan.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Good, I'm glad.
So, you know, I want to start just by doing a little bit of vocabulary building because not everyone will know what everything is.
Yeah.
So first piece of the vocab is the 2040 plan, right? So this is a regional planning plan. Or mm-hmm. It's a planning plan, Dan. It's where people –
yeah.
Plan around
planning.
Mm-hmm. So if you can tell me what the 2040 plan is in a more eloquent way than I did, I think I'd appreciate it. Listeners would appreciate it.
Foresight is 2020 or 2040, I guess they should say. Foresight is 2040. The Metro 2040 plan is basically, it's a regional growth strategy that Metro Vancouver came up with. And they got all of the, I think there's 21 different municipalities in Metro Vancouver. You know, everything from Big Vancouver and Surrey to Anmore and Belcarra and everything in between. So obviously these 21 different municipalities, they've all got pretty different needs, pressures, challenges that they're all facing. But the Metro Vancouver, you know, the regional authority and their planning department tried to get all 21 of them on board to kind of share this common vision. And in, I think it was July of 2011, all 21 of them unanimously right. approved it. Reminds me of Donald Trump had a lot of trouble saying anonymous last week. Unanimously approved it. Basically it's a plan for how the region is going to grow between – I mean at that time I guess it was the next, 29 years? But the idea is that the region's expected to have 1 million new people coming to the region by 2040.
Right.
And so how are we going to make room for these people – have enough homes for these people as well as the existing people and the aging people, and how are we going to have enough jobs for them? How are they going to get around? So it was a big, huge plan. It took years of work on Metro's part, but yeah, they eventually got everybody on board. So now when we look back at 2011, when they all agreed to this plan, I guess, you know, it's been 7 years, two mayoral terms, right? And we're about to have, you know, elect the third mayor in each of these municipalities since that time. And there's also been a census since then. So it's kind of Metro had a sort of 5-year benchmark to like look at how things are growing, where they're growing faster than expected or slower than expected or what's happening. So, you know, there's a lot of debates going on about development and the speed of it and the direction of it and the shape it's taking. But as we say, each of these 21 municipalities are quite different. So I think those debates are kind of different in
Do you think it's fair to ask, like, has this worked? Has this plan worked? Because, you know, like we're 7 years in, like you were saying, challenges each municipality faces are, you know, changing over time as well. It's just, I don't like in my notes, it sort of says, ask Dan. How has it worked so far?
Yeah.
And I like, can you answer that?
I think that's a fair question. I mean, people much smarter than me could answer it. But I mean, I asked Metro Vancouver's Director of Regional Planning, her name's Heather McNell, and I kind of asked her that question, like, you know, how's it going?
Yeah.
And she said, you know, from their perspective, a lot of the key kind of performance measures are on track. So one of their big performance measures, and a lot of this stuff's kind of, you know, maybe wonky, but hopefully somewhat interesting to somebody out there.
Sure.
But a big part of it is they had set a goal of making sure that almost all of their growth, I think it was maybe 98% or something. I can't remember what they were targeting, but they had a goal that almost all the growth would be within what they call the urban containment boundary. So Metro Vancouver has this static, rigid boundary where they want their growth to be happening. And the idea is that you don't just sprawl out everywhere. And that is something that they've achieved. They had 70,000 new or additional, like a net increase of 70,000 new homes added by the end of 2016. Since from 2011 to 2016, they had 70,000 new homes added, and almost all of them, 98-point-something percent, were within that urban containment boundary. And the idea is that you're not just paving down rural areas, agricultural lands, just greenfield space to build sprawling new subdivisions and suburbs,
right,
as some cities around North America have done, right?
Sure.
Something that Heather McNell told me that I thought was interesting, you know, over recent years, about 80% of Metro Vancouver's growth has been within by basically densification and by infill development, redevelopment, you know, knocking down a one-story building and building a five-story building, by densifying existing neighborhoods. And then about 20% of it was by building over sort of unbuilt areas, undeveloped areas, greenfield spaces. But almost all of those greenfield spaces were still within that urban containment boundary. So kind of 80-20 split. Of 80% densifying, 20% spreading out into undeveloped areas. And that compared with about 50-50 for the Greater Toronto Area. So sprawl is a big issue in the Greater Toronto Area. Obviously, way more people than the Metro Vancouver Sure. area has. But, I mean, you're from out that way, aren't you? It's
a little bit.
It sprawls.
Yeah,
in every direction.
Just, I'm a transit guy who doesn't drive, though. So my footprint is actually very, very small.
But it's still a challenge getting around on transit.
Yeah, for sure. The sprawl is real, and sure, it's a challenge and all that sort of stuff. But I really can't appreciate it the same way, let's say, one of our colleagues who's like driving in from Langley to come to the newsroom.
Sure.
Right? Like, I don't know. Like, but to me, absolutely, it's an issue. It seems like it's playing out a little bit in Surrey as well, and you touch on that in your column where they want to redefine those boundaries to allow for some sprawl and sort of what those boundaries mean in other municipalities.
Then even one of the things McNell mentioned to me is that – so in Toronto, the Greater Toronto Area is 50-50 sort of between densifying and sprawling into new areas. And in Calgary, it's like 25-75.
Yeah.
So 25% densifying, 75% just sprawling out.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's visiting Calgary. It's nuts.
Hey?
It's nuts in Calgary.
Totally.
It's this like new, and in some ways, maybe it's not all bad because there's a lot of affordable townhouse developments going in on the south end of the city.
Mm.
And we have friends who are struggling to get into the housing market. Mm. And they were able to get into a townhouse to raise their two kids, and I think the sticker on the townhouse was like $215 or something.
In Calgary.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's south,
sure,
right? But it's still Calgary. Like you're still on like the whole highway grid, that sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
So
it's just a different approach to urban planning.
And they have so much more space in certain ways. Like everyone sort of says, you know, Vancouver's constrained, the mountains, the water,
the ocean.
All this sort of
stuff. It's really hard to build houses on the ocean. Maybe. I've heard.
Ask MacGyver. MacGyver lived on a houseboat. He did okay. Yeah.
He probably built it too with bubblegum and
paper. I'm going to say MacGyver was shot in BC in Vancouver.
Was it?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
It's part of our heritage.
Yeah.
So but that's true. Vancouver obviously is mountains, border, ocean.
All
it's tough.
And then an artificial boundary too, sort of saying we're not going to develop irresponsibly beyond that boundary, right?
And so, you know, I mean, so Heather McNell is saying they've done a pretty good job of containing sprawl, densifying, developing in a responsible way. You know, she's defending the work that her department has done. But, you know, I talked to Andy Yan as well. You know, Andy is the director of the city program at SFU.
Yeah.
Frequent, commentator on these kinds of issues. And,
love me
you know,
some Andy Yan. Hey, he's fantastic.
He's great.
Yeah.
He's the best.
Yeah.
We talk to him a lot. But he's not he doesn't hesitate to criticize when he thinks criticism is due. He's a pretty straight shooter. And he says, this is an area that Metro Vancouver has done a pretty good job of containing sprawl. And there is this tension because it's kind of natural that a lot of residents and neighborhoods are going to resist densification, right? They like things the way they have been for a while. So it's natural that there's pushback to densification.
Yeah.
If you've lived in a house with a picket fence and a backyard where your kids can play soccer and run around and you're used to that, the idea of having a apartment building built next door, maybe you don't like that idea. That's natural. But Andy Yan says, and other urbanists and planners and stuff will tell us, it is generally accepted that cities need to densify all over the world. It's not unique to Canada, but all over the world, populations are urbanizing more and more and more. Almost every country is urbanizing at varying rates. Mm-hmm. And so they need to sort of figure out ways to make room for these people. So as we say, neighbors don't always like it. Residents don't always like the idea of densifying. But there are pluses to it from a sort of government's perspective. As Andy was telling me, it's good financial management. If you've got a huge sprawling area, the infrastructure maintenance is way more expensive. Things like roads, sewers, all that sort of boring, unsexy stuff that city governments have to concern themselves with, that if it's working well, we don't think about it, right? It's just going on in the background. But as Andy says, if you've got a more dense area, that it helps keep a good fiscal house in order, I think he said. And then the other thing, of course, too, is your ecological footprint is better. If you've got a lot of people who can walk to work, bike to work, take transit to work, as opposed to being stuck in their car on the Don Valley Parkway for a long time.
The DVP.
Not moving.
Yeah.
It's a better ecological kind of strategy. But, of course, not everyone likes it. Some people do like it. Some people like the idea of having a dense, walkable area.
I do, sure. For sure.
Yeah.
Right? But I'm like a city guy, so.
Yeah.
Next piece of vocabulary, as we talk about density and the way that we have done it, is Vancouverism.
Oh, yeah.
So that came up in your piece as well, where you talk about how Vancouver has already done a unique job. And you kind of define Vancouverism a little bit?
Well, yeah, I just stole the definition on the City of Vancouver's website. The definition they provide, they called Vancouverism, I got it here. They said it's an internationally known term that describes a new kind of city living. And then the city website describes it as Vancouverism means slim towers for density, widely separated by low-rise buildings. So apparently this is something that is known in planning circles.
Sure.
According to the city, it's known internationally. Model of urban design.
I was going to say, I think you said it, right? You said Vancouverism is really evident downtown. Maybe not so evident in other parts of the city.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, where we are right now in East Van, it's, you know, mostly there's vast swaths of low density kind of suburban style single family neighborhoods. If you look at a zoning map of Vancouver, and lots of people have pointed this out before, and it's something that I imagine we'll be hearing more and more about leading up to this election. Vancouver is known for these towers, the City of Glass, that is a tiny part of the map of Vancouver, that downtown core, and maybe say, you know, north of 16th or north of Broadway. There's that kind of chunk. But the vast majority of the city's residential land is zoned pretty low density. You can only build single family houses. Now, planners point out that the term single family house is maybe a bit of a misnomer because a lot of them you can have up to three units, right? You can have a basement suite that's totally locked off and that's legal. Yeah. Although those weren't even legal until fairly recently. I think city council voted to legalize those in like the 90s or something. It's crazy that, you could have a laneway house. So with one single family house, you could house three families, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hypothetically. But so if you look at a map of the city, the majority of residential land is low density single family houses. So
not exactly Vancouverism.
No, that's one of the things Andy Yan was saying. Like maybe there's a couple different kinds of Vancouverism, and this is one Vancouverism, and this is another Vancouverism, but. Yeah, that approach, though, that, the fact that so much of the land has been reserved for single family houses, that could be changing. And that's something we talked in here in this very podcast with Gord Price about a few weeks, maybe months ago.
Yeah, that's right.
Gord Price is a longtime city councilor representing the MPA on Vancouver City Council. And he said for the longest time, the idea of changing the zoning in Vancouver's single family neighborhoods, that was – to use Gord's expression, he said that was the third rail of Vancouver politics. You just could not touch that issue. Yeah. It was off limits. You couldn't change the complexion of the city's single family neighborhoods. Now maybe it's changing.
I felt that way after sitting in the Sauder School of Business housing panel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next piece of vocabulary: make room.
Ah, making room.
Making room. Indeed. Is it making room or make room?
Making room.
Making room.
Making room is the name of a housing plan that Vancouver is looking at. Basically, over the summer, Vancouver City Council sort of voted to move forward with this making room program. And basically what they've voted to do is to have city staff research this, look at it, and then report back by, I think it's next summer. So a year from now, to report back with specific changes to bylaws and ways they could move forward with this, these changes that would allow for more kinds of housing options in those residential, low-density, single-family neighborhoods that we were just talking about.
Right.
So that's exactly what they're looking at. Is their city staff, as we speak, is looking at how can they introduce duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes, townhouses, more townhouses, and three- and four-story apartment buildings even in a lot of those areas of the city that, as we say, if you look at a map or a bird's eye view, it's vast swaths of the city that they're looking at opening up to these different kinds of housing types.
Pre-zoning.
So that will, yeah, like I think just citywide zoning changes. It's a big sweeping change. Now, it won't be decided, I mean, unless something happens, like it's staff's not supposed to report back until next year when, of course, we're going to have a new mayor and a largely new council.
Sure. So what's up with these quick start actions?
I'm glad you asked.
Yeah.
In the meantime, though, so just days from now, next week, over the summer when city council asked staff to go look into this making room thing, they also asked them to do a couple of quick start adjustments. And so those are coming to a public hearing this coming Tuesday, so next week, which is the last week of regular council business before the October 20th election. So I think September 18th? Yeah, September 18th, there is a public hearing where they're going to be looking at these quick start adjustments to making room. Now, the most noteworthy, the one that everyone's kind of noticed in these quick start adjustments, is the idea of opening up most of the residential land in Vancouver or most of the RS zones, most of the single family neighborhoods, opening them up to duplexes. So they're going to be looking at how to do the triplexes and fourplexes, townhouses next year. But in the meantime, they're looking at taking this step in the meantime of opening up a lot of land to duplexes. Now, some people have pointed out, I mean, some people have just totally up in arms about this. They freaked out.
Sure.
They're saying that this is going to ruin all of Vancouver's neighborhoods, or it's a giveaway to developers, or it's a bonanza.
It's going to take a chainsaw.
Chainsaw massacre. Like that That's what Elizabeth Murphy wrote an op-ed in the Vancouver Sun calling it a chainsaw massacre to Vancouver zoning. She thought it would escalate housing values. Other people have said this is not radical. It's overdue. Right. There's a housing activist named Dryley Wood who also wrote his own op-ed in the Vancouver Sun, I think just days before Elizabeth Murphy's ran. And his said that something to the effect, I'm kind of paraphrasing here, but he said, you know, people who are comfortably housed, so maybe somebody who bought a house in a very different real estate market in Vancouver, maybe they owe, maybe it's mortgage free at this point, or they're comfortably housed, they're homeowners and they're comfortable. And he said for them, maybe preserving their status quo is more important to them than sort of making room for other people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure people like Elizabeth Murphy might take umbrage at that characterization, but that was kind of his point.
So the decision on quick start will happen before the election. Is that right?
I think so. It's scheduled. Council is expected to vote on it after the public hearing. The public hearing is scheduled for Tuesday. So unless something changes, I think, yeah, we'll be hearing about it. Stay tuned next week.
I don't know. I think I've been paying like way too much attention to like American politics where it's like, oh, you know, an election is coming, guys. Like, let's wait until like the next person gets in. And then when they get in, then we'll take action. Right. So, for better or worse, maybe. Don't want to get into one side or the other, but like that was the argument made for like the U.S. Supreme Court justice, right? Where it's like, you have a lame duck.
Yeah.
Right? They're on their way out.
Yeah.
We're not going to let you have a candidate to get their hearings, right?
Well, we've heard a similar argument here.
Yeah, I don't know. And I'm not saying city business should stop at all, right? But I am curious to know. The timing of Quick Start kind of piqued my interest.
Oh, yeah.
It also piqued the interest of Kennedy Stewart.
Indeed.
Because what did he say? He said, let's defer decisions on Quick Start until after the election?
Yeah. He's largely supportive of this direction. Like, he actually thinks we shouldn't be afraid of opening up neighborhoods to duplexes. But he said, what's a couple weeks? Like, let's wait. Let's vote on this after the election. Let's vote on these very issues. That was his point. And other candidates had pretty similar positions on it. Ken Sim as well said he just couldn't vote because this process – he wouldn't support it because this process is flawed. Shauna Sylvester, basically everybody who I talked to said that they couldn't support it because they thought it was kind of rushed in at the end of this. And even some of the sitting counselors, like Adrian Carr, who is one of the few counselors running for re-election, she kind of questioned why, you know, a sort of, yeah, quote-unquote lame duck council was pushing this through at the last minute. So that question has been raised. You know, other people are really in favor of this and saying this should happen. This is overdue. It's a small step in what some people think is the right direction. Mm-hmm. Hector Bremner, because he's the only sitting councilor running for mayor, he's not supposed to comment publicly about which way he's going to vote or anything like that. He's, you know, all he can say is he's keeping an open mind ahead of Tuesday's hearing. He wants to go to Tuesday's hearing and hear about it. But I think it's fair to say that this kind of move is largely in line with what he's been campaigning on and talking about. And he wants to open up, quote unquote, exclusionary zoning in Vancouver. He wants to increase the housing supply, increase the different kinds of options. So it seems in line with what he's been pushing. Some candidates have been really critical of this, and most notably, as I can remember, David Chen, who's the mayoral candidate for Pro Vancouver. He doesn't like the plan. He thinks it's a kind of giveaway or bonanza for developers. And Wei Young as well called it a reckless plan. Wei Young is the Coalition Vancouver mayoral candidate. She said it's going to ruin Vancouver's heritage, neighborhoods, and character. So she's quite opposed to it.
Okay. So for vocabulary to keep our ears open for the next week or two when it comes to the Vancouver election, we've got Vancouverism,
mm-hmm.
making room, not make room, and quick start actions.
Mm.
Okay. Let's move on to North Van, another region, mm-hmm. not just the municipality, but the entire region that you talk about, write about, columnize about, not columnize about, write about in your piece. And first off, I just want to acknowledge the nickname Density Daryl.
Density Daryl.
Which I loved. Density Daryl.
I don't know who came up with that.
So it's a good one. So what's the... North Van,
yeah.
Density came in, and the consequence maybe has been traffic, right?
Sure.
And does it feel like that's what people are talking about in North Van a little bit? It's like traffic has changed because of all this density, and we need to think about what we're doing.
To go back there, Density Daryl, who this Density Daryl fellow is for our listeners, that's Daryl Masato, the four-term mayor of the city of North Vancouver.
Who does not know Density Daryl? Well, that's my question.
I don't know. Just in case.
Tweet it, Dan.
So Density Daryl, is Daryl Masato. He's been the mayor of the city of North Vancouver, which is that kind of small, it's about 12 square kilometers around Lonsdale Avenue on the north shore of the Burnard Inlet. Then beyond that is the district of North Vancouver. But so the city of North Vancouver, where Density Daryl is the mayor, has seen a lot of development over the last few years, especially
the last. It feels
like it's
changed.
Yeah. Like, oh, it's
really changed.
Yeah. I mean, I was looking at this report that didn't end up making it into this story, but there was a report last year from the Greater Vancouver Home Builders Association where they were looking at sort of the housing demand in different municipalities across Metro Vancouver, and they found that almost every municipality is not building enough, not approving enough housing, not building enough housing to meet demand. Now, again, this comes from the Home Builders Association, so obviously they have a interest in building homes. They want to build homes, but you know, this is according to their data. They thought that most places are not building enough. One of the few exceptions was the city of North Vancouver, which according to their analysis, the home builders' analysis, was building more than enough. The pace of population growth has been significant there too. I was looking at the census. In recent years, the population of the North Shore overall has been like significantly slower than the regional average for growth. The population for West Vancouver actually declined. Not only was it growing slower, but it actually went down. There's fewer people now in West Van than there were 5 years ago. The city of North Vancouver is a different story. So in the city of North Van proper, I think they've been about double the regional growth average for population. So of course, and so there's been a lot of density, a lot of development. We talk about, you know, Daryl Masato's nickname, Density Daryl, which I think he seems to kind of wear with some pride. I think he kind of likes it.
Why not?
And yeah, but so that has been what we're hearing about is some people feel the pace of development and density has been too fast. They don't like the look of this new North Van. And particularly they're upset about how difficult it is to get to, from, and around the North Shore, the transportation, traffic gridlock. People are upset about that. Just this week, there was this release of this long-awaited report about that very thing. Bowen Ma, who's the NDP MLA for Lonsdale, North Vancouver, I think, she had convened this working group to look at transportation and traffic on the North Shore. And so she released this report this week, which was covered in the Sun and Province by Kevin Griffin. And that's worth reading about as well.
Okay. So if one of the issues is getting to and from North Van, I think one of the mayoral candidates said something along the lines of, well, TransLink, you know, doesn't care about us, but we're low on TransLink's priority list or something like that. What role does TransLink have to play in sort of easing this issue, if any? If any role.
Yeah. Well,
maybe they can just let it, you know, yeah. Second Narrows, Lionsgate, we're good.
Yeah. Well, one of the candidates for mayor, Guy Haywood, who was a two-term councillor, he's not currently on council, he said to me something to the effect that, you know, there's development pressures all over the place. Everywhere is densifying in Metro Vancouver, but North Van and the North Shore has borne kind of a disproportionate burden of this. We're developing too much, too fast. We don't have the transportation infrastructure to support it. And his point is that we're too small to get the attention of TransLink because all their attention is going to the Broadway subway expansion in Vancouver and the Surrey Light Rail. So Haywood's position is we need to scale back the pace of development, slow it right down because it's too much too fast. Linda Buchanan is a sitting councillor in her second term, and she has kind of largely supported Density Daryl and a lot of his direction for the city. She's very clear that, you know, she has her own vision for the city. She's not just sort of Daryl's heir, but she has her own vision, her own ideas, but she largely defends the direction the city's taken, sort of a more urban, dense kind of feel. She says it's more vibrant now. Parts of sort of lower Lonsdale are revitalized. She says, you know, when she was growing up in North Van, her parents didn't want her to go to lower Lonsdale. It was rough. And now it's revitalized, you know. So she's kind of a defender of that new, more urban area. She acknowledges there's issues around traffic and transit. And to that TransLink point, she says that there are some elements in the, you know, the Mayor's Council on Regional Transportation, their 10-year plan, which sort of the big ticket items are that Broadway subway expansion in Vancouver, the Surrey LRT that we just talked about. But there's also some stuff in there for the North Shore, including I think they've got these east-west beeline buses.
Right.
The idea is to try to be able to move people east and west more quickly without forcing them to get in their cars and then get onto the freeway. They can try to move people east-west more quickly with buses. And there's a few other things, I think, increased C-bus frequency. And she says she thinks that stuff's going to help, but she does feel like they really need to do more of getting senior government's attention to say – to get more
– like let's twin a bridge kind
transit.
Of thing?
Transit. You know – I'm not an expert on this, but I think the idea of increasing bridge capacity is actually, as much as it may seem like a solution, it's got its own issues.
What?
Yeah.
It's passé? It's done?
I don't know. I mean, I think because it's got challenges on both sides. Like if you just have a ton more cars coming in, mm-hmm. both to downtown and to the mm-hmm. North Shore, mm-hmm. that's not necessarily – you know, there's that old saying that I've heard urban planners say where, the idea that if you've got a traffic problem and you just add more lanes for cars, mm-hmm. It's like if you're overweight and you want to try to fix it by just instead of losing weight, you try to buy a bigger belt.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I think there's that. I mean, the bridge traffic is a huge problem. I mean, I think it was Masato or it may have been the West Van Mayor. Someone pointed out that, you know, in 1960, there were what, like, 8 lanes going from Vancouver to the North Shore.
Right.
And now 50 years later, there's 8 lanes going from Vancouver to the North Shore. It hasn't changed, but think about how different mm-hmm. Vancouver and the North Shore are now.
What about a tunnel? Could we do a tunnel?
It seems cool.
Okay.
It might be good too, because then you could have it at a different point.
Yeah.
Like it wouldn't need to go right where the Lion's Gate is or where the Iron Workers is. I don't know. I mean,
they can run under the C-Bus route.
To me, I love the C-Bus. I don't know the answer. There's probably a really good answer to this, but to me, I think it would be cool. There's probably a good answer for why this doesn't happen or shouldn't happen or can't happen. But I love the C-Bus, and I don't see why couldn't you have like four C-Buses going across at different points? Kind of like in Hong Kong. You've been to Hong Kong?
Yeah.
Those like ferries they have that go across the bay?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're so convenient. They're fun to ride.
Even like the little aquabuses on False Creek.
Oh, I'm a huge supporter of the aquabuses. They're actually not just a fun thing for tourists to do. It's actually a good way to get around. It's like less than $4. It's like the price of a bus ticket.
And you can take your dog on if you want.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's I love the there's two. There's the False Creek ferries and the aquabus.
I wonder if they should do that. Maybe TransLink does have more of a role to play in sort of supporting North Van. More C-buses.
That's what all the North Van candidates say is they want some more love from TransLink and the province and the feds in terms of getting some. I mean, I don't think they're about to have a subway there anytime soon or anything, but in North Van in particular, I don't hear it coming out of West Van a lot. You don't hear people in West Van saying they want more transit access, or I haven't at least heard that.
No, their buses are often like quite empty and nice too. Like I never feel squeezed on a West Van bus.
I don't know if I've ever seen a West Van.
One of the 250s? The 250 series?
Oh, I guess I've taken it to Horseshoe Bay before. Yeah, I've taken it to the ferry.
Yeah, I think those are the only ones that are like super busy.
But that's not probably representative of what actual sort of intra-city West Van bus is like.
Yeah, I don't know. I just love those West Van buses. If Coast Mountain Bus wants to sponsor this podcast, let us know. Let us know.
They have like plush seats and TVs and a jacuzzi in the back.
It's a little bit more spacious, a little different configuration. You know, the fabric used on the seats is a bit nicer. I love me a West Van bus. Nice. They're good. Last municipality, very quickly, we want to talk about, or region, I should say, south of the Fraser, not necessarily municipality. And you talk about, you picked out Campbell Heights as an area, not a region, an area where there are some very specific challenges. Campbell Heights, Dan, what's going on there?
So South Campbell Heights is
South Campbell Heights, my bad. Yeah, South Campbell.
Apparently, it is an area in Surrey that the city has been trying for years to develop. Now, our colleague Jen Saltman, who reports on sort of Metro Vancouver, and she largely reports from Surrey, she knows, she's the real expert on this, and she covered it when this proposal went to the Metro Vancouver board. So the city of Surrey has been trying for years to develop this, but they had to go to Metro Vancouver and get approval from the board, specifically because the proposal involved changing that urban containment boundary that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
So Metro Vancouver, the regional authority, has been trying to do almost all of its development inside the urban containment boundary, not sprawling out and bulldozing forests and agricultural lands and whatever. So, you know, in Vancouver, the city of Vancouver, that's not really an issue. I mean, the city of North Vancouver, I believe 100% of it is within the urban containment boundary. So they're never going to come up against this issue. But in Surrey, it's an issue, as in the other south of the Fraser municipalities like the township of Langley and Delta. This is an issue for them where they have to grow, because I think about 45% of population growth in Metro Vancouver has been in those municipalities south of the Fraser.
Right.
And that's more than double the amount that's gone to the city of Vancouver in recent years. Right. So those areas are growing fast, and they need to figure out where to put all these people. And they do have space, but as we say, there's these – land use issues. So anyway, the city of Surrey earlier this year went to Metro Vancouver and asked for permission to change the urban containment boundary. They got shot down. Some of the directors on the board of Metro Vancouver said no. There was a really good quote, I believe it was from the mayor of Pitt Meadows, who's a director on the Metro Vancouver board, Mayor Becker. He said something to the effect that he's tired of real estate developers and people thinking that they can just take the regional growth strategy and the urban containment boundary and just shake it up like an etch-a-sketch and do what they want with it. It's a very good quote.
That is a good one.
And so they shot it down, and they sent City of Surrey back to the drawing board to come up with a new proposal, because they said you can't mess with this boundary. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting kind of debate. I mean, I talked to Tom Gill, who was a councillor at the time, a Surrey councillor. Now he's running for mayor. And he said he's kind of open. He's not, dead set on having residential development there, but he's open to whatever use Metro Vancouver feels is okay. But what they've got to do, he kept using the word conundrum. He used it a few times when we were talking. The conundrum he says they face is that the ratepayers association in the nearby neighborhood, they want one thing. The landowners who own all this land in South Campbell Heights, they want one thing.
Right.
There's these environmental groups and they want something completely different.
Right.
Then he, there, you know, he knows what he thinks Metro Vancouver is going to want, and that might be something different. So they've got to balance these different priorities. And that, yeah, according to Councillor Gill, that's the challenge that they face.
Huh. So in Vancouver, density is coming no matter what. Feels like no matter what.
Density's coming to all of us no matter what, unless you go.
The way you did your column, or the way you did the piece, it's very much, Vancouver is moving forward. Perhaps North Van moved too fast. And perhaps Surrey is still questioning whether density is needed if they can still expand.
It's, right? I mean, density's coming to everyone some way or another. In Vancouver, you'll have a lot of people saying that it has come way too slow. We've had tons of density in certain parts of Vancouver. But again, if you look at a zoning map, it's a small piece of the city. If you look at everything south of 16th Avenue, mm-hmm. not a ton of density, except for maybe in a couple pockets, actually, in Southeast Van around some of the SkyTrain.
Like stuff. Canada Line?
Yeah, but – and also the
like Renfrew area?
Rupert. Joyce Collingwood and stuff. So there are some areas there where they've had – significant density, I guess. But largely south of 16th there's exceptions, but it hasn't been that dense. So there are some people in Vancouver that say Vancouver has been – the city of Vancouver, despite its reputation for the city of glass skyscrapers, has actually been too slow to embrace density. There are some people who say that. Others will say the opposite. Sure. In North Van, that seems like it's largely the thing this election is being run on. Linda Buchanan is saying a lot of people she knows like this dense, vibrant air, town, new cultural and arts amenities, night markets, the revitalized, redeveloped shipyards area. People like this. Others, so there's former Council Guy Haywood, sitting Councilor Rod Clark, and local businessman Kerry Morris. They're all kind of running on that, let's slow it down, this is too much. Yeah, and then Surrey, they still do have space out there. Tom Gill said to me he thinks they do need to do a better job of embracing density, and they want to have more density around their transit corridors. They're lucky enough to have some rapid transit now, and they want to develop more around there, around SkyTrain and stuff like that. So okay. It's coming. Yeah, density is presumably coming to all parts of the Lower Mainland, but different paces, different – it'll take different forms in different parts.
One last thing I want to talk about before we go, because we've been talking for – we're right at an hour mark. This is like the ideal podcast length, Dan.
I think this is a new record, isn't it?
For our project,
for ours,
yes.
Yeah.
But we're also working on another project that's going to appear in podcast form, and that is what I've been calling the minis. So I just wanted to end talking about the minis. So people know to look for this. We are trying to – what? What are we trying to do, Dan?
Well, we are going to have a number of the Vancouver mayoral candidates come into the Sun and Province newsroom over the next couple of weeks for sort of little mini debates. And we'll be recording them, of course, and then we'll be sharing them.
Yeah, big time.
With listeners and presumably viewers too, I think, for
maybe some video.
Yeah. Maybe some video or bits of video. Anyways, we'll be hearing that. And seeing that, we're going to break them off into smaller groups so it's not unwieldy. We've got, as we touched on earlier, a lot of candidates. Even just if you stick to the mayoral candidates without getting the council candidates in there, it's still a lot. So yeah, we'll be breaking them up into smaller groups, and we'll be doing that over the next few weeks. And so people can hopefully be hearing that by the end of September.
Yeah, that'd be really nice. That'd be really, really nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, Dan, I think we have captured the essence of urban planning in Metro Vancouver in just under an hour. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Darm.